Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Lace them up for some Bees Talk right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
Biggest concern with today's two-hour skate. Bruins won four in a row. Cranky Kalman is actually well-rested, so we actually get Matt Stradamus today instead of the vicious Kalman that we really have come to know and love on this program. Hey,
good morning to Dougie Hamilton. I'm sure he's up listening right
oh,
now.
Oh, good. Is that going to get you going?
Oh, yeah.
A little Dougie venom. Pete Blackburn is here, CBS Sports. Of course, he has not made the open yet, but he will before the season ends. That I guarantee.
I doubt it.
Okay. Don't doubt that. It's going to happen one of these weeks. I want to start off here. We had two games to react to this week. One was the Game 6 closeout in Columbus, the 3-0 shutout. And, of course, Game 1, the Bruins take a 5-2 win. Signature moment of Thursday's win. Was it Thursday?
Yeah.
Thursday night. What's the lasting memory for you guys from the win? Just kind of want to pick your brain here in terms of how you viewed this game. I think this will reveal a lot. Just off the top, off the cuff, because it's better that way. Kalman, what's the...
It's just, well, it goes back to what I've been thinking for a little while here. This Bruins team, there is no memorable moment because they just go out and win the game. There's no magic here.
This is going to sound bleak, but I think the one for me is Chara taking the shot off the foot.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think it was the most concerning, and it stuck with me. And just all the tweets about whether he's on the bench, whether he's not on the bench, he's back on the bench. It stuck with me.
Did you tweet about that, Calvin, at the game? Whether no. Chara was back? You actually didn't like tweet at all during the game.
I don't follow the crowd. I watched the game. People right, don't
your
watch.
Job
people,
is to interact with people, fans.
People
it was
are
the
buried
worst
in
possible
Twitter.
Sequence because he didn't come out to start the second period.
Right.
But then he came out 5 seconds after the second period started.
I think it was actually five seconds before it started.
So everybody had already sent out their Chara's not on the bench to start the second tweets. And then they had to send out their, oh, Chara is on the bench to start the second.
Why was he late? What do you do during the period? You take a shot off your ankle or whatever. You take the skate Mr. Miyagi. Off and have like
yeah,
ice it up.
Regrow or? Another foot.
Okay. Mr. Miyagi was in there. Come on.
TB12 Alex Guerrero?
Absolutely.
Rubbing
some
him down?
Lotion on there or something.
All right. Well, that's interesting. But Chara was not really a story of the game, though, right? I mean, by the end of it, although McAvoy didn't play, so I guess he had a little more spotlight on him. He's got a new partner and all that.
The story of the game is Dougie Hamilton melted.
Yeah.
He had a meltdown.
To me, that's the takeaway. But you actually wrote about Marchand being a good guy after the game, as many people did.
That's one of many. Monumental moment.
So, like in the right after the game, that's kind of what you were thinking, or the quote
Absolutely.
Was too good that you had to write
well,
about it.
The quote was, I didn't know the quote was going to be too good because I didn't know he was going to talk to me, and only talk to me after that game. And
I meant the Cassidy quote.
Oh, the Cassidy quote. Yeah,
the A Marshy turning over new leaf. A Marshy.
Yeah, no, that was good too. But
what was the quote that?
Oh, he just said, you don't usually see me in that position. That's what it said, and we all know that. That's why we're talking about it.
And the reference there is, of course, early third period, 2-1 deficit. Jordan Staal, boarding penalty. Marchand gets in the way and prevents retaliation from his teammate.
And the boarding penalty, I saw everyone in Toronto was calling for a suspension after that, you know, of course.
Yeah. Not quite. Actually, it's become the other way. The bigger talker for us Friday on Mutt and Callahan was the officiating and whether those calls needed to be made at all. And Don Cherry was on with us, and he kind of supported...
Did you have a translator with him?
Yeah, we had a translator. But I mean, he's an old school guy, so where do you expect he's going to go? But he was of the mindset that it's just the NHL these days, and particularly in that game, it's become too soft.
I think if Carolina is complaining about the officiating in that game, then they're out of their minds because they committed so many more penalties than they were called that they got away with it. You can't call everything, and they got away with it.
I think they have a gripe in the third period, but if you look at that game as a whole, it was bad both ways because the first couple periods, the Bruins were getting victimized by soft calls.
The first shift of the game, Fogle decked Krug away from the puck, should have been interference, and they didn't call anything.
See, so I didn't think that.
The most egregious non-interference call was the one at center ice on Corrali, which ended up somehow ends up in a Bruins power play that they score on. So that's maybe the
you
most
thought that
egregious.
Should have been called?
At center ice? Absolutely.
Because Corrali's backing away.
Yeah, I think it was a collision. I didn't think it was
so
a penalty.
Too. I thought incidental contact.
I thought they got that one right.
Sure, but he still decked him at center ice. So his back to the play. It's interference.
So it's his fault he's in the way. You got to find a way to avoid the
pretty
contact.
Pretty much.
There.
You just can't run a guy from behind. So
I don't know. And the one they didn't call, Marchand had a stick broken on his back at some point, which I also thought was sort of incidental.
And then there was
contact.
One where some guy was riding on Chara's back while he tried to get the puck out from behind the net.
A real greasy game from Jordan Staal, because he is the guy who cross-checked Marchand in the back.
But any doubt, that's a penalty, right?
No.
That's a penalty, right? Staal's boarding.
So with the way that they've been calling these playoffs, who knows? It's all over the place.
Yeah, the NHL is now facing a terrible bad rap of the officials and the replay booth can't get their heads out of their asses and have no idea what they're doing. I mean, not only the Vegas penalty, in Game 7 with San Jose, but the Colorado review after McKinnon sets up.
I still don't understand what happened there.
Wilson.
So don't ask me.
And Landeskog didn't get off the ice soon enough. He had one skate on the ice, and they're going with a fine-tooth comb over, to take it off the board. That's a Game 7. It tied the game at 2. Instead, it's taken off the board, and Colorado loses Game 7.
Well, we have so this review because Montreal got screwed once, and now we all have to live with it. So
it's completely against the spirit of the offside call to look at that play, a guy that's 100 feet away from anything of importance happening, and take away a goal. It's everything I hate about the offside reviews.
I think most people agree with you there, and it would stand to reason the NHL would draw back on this then and go less review on offsides plays. Is that going to happen?
You would think, but it seems like the league is just more replay. We want more replay. We want replays for major penalties. If you could take away offside review penalties and give it to major penalty review, I'm all for that.
But they won't let you review, for instance, the McAvoy hit, which was a one-game suspension, and they have no ability to call a major penalty on it. So it's a two-minute minor. Now, why can't you review that? If you can review everything else, I mean,
if we're out here reviewing the whole game, 2-minute minors, absolutely not. No, thank you.
Okay, but in that case, at least they should change the rules so there's an ability to call a major penalty on a headshot, right?
For sure.
So that's one change that could be coming.
So you're going to take that headshot, so-called headshot, and you're going to what are you going to do? You're going to review it, and you're going to slow it down and look at it and determine intent. The whole point of the major would be like an intent to injure, not a hockey play gone wrong. So you're going to watch – how many times are you going to watch the replay to change your mind about it? I don't think you review intent to injure.
I just think you review, is it a headshot? Is it a shot to the head, which is
– But you already said there's no major for that.
But there should be. If there's any penalty in the book that should have these guys a provision for a major,
these guys
check
just
the head.
Play.
What was the call? Was it charging or boarding? I don't even remember.
Well, the only it could be illegal to the head because there was no elbow. There was no charging. There were no other calls the guy could make.
Idiot. So it's obviously a hit to the head because there's no major for it. But yes, so okay. So the NHL has a problem, at least a perception problem, that they reviewed too much. And then they also now are developing, at least among some circles, a perception that they're calling too many penalties during the playoffs. I mean, Carolina fans felt that way, I'm sure. Rod Brind'Amour was kind of squawking about it a little bit. I mean, he admitted that they have to kill those penalties off. Dougie Hamilton basically said neither of the calls against me were penalties at all.
Yeah.
Well, which is
he elbowed
backers
idiotic. In the head on the second one, so I don't know what he's complaining about there. But
Do we have Don Cherry? This is what he said when he was on with us on Friday on Mutt and Callahan.
Well, there was so much whining and after the first week by the media, don't let this go. You got to call more penalties. And so they call more penalties now, and you don't, you like as a coach, you don't know what to expect. Your heart's in your mouth. Are they going to call a retaliatory or, I mean, the penalties last night? The penalties would never be called, say 20, 30 years ago, but now they're calling them a little hook here, a little hook there. It reminds me of the regular season, but they make it exciting, and I guess people don't realize that hockey in the playoffs is supposed to be war, and it's not.
So your reaction there to Cherry? I mean,
as much as I like to make fun of that guy, he makes decent points. Like my only complaint is you can call it like the regular season. Just call it like the regular season in every single game. It's just way too inconsistent at this point. And he makes a good point where if you're a coach, you come into a game not knowing what the hell is going to be called for you or how you're going to be able to play and get away with things.
That's an absolute fact. I would guess if you polled every coach, they would say, every night I have to go in and kind of gauge based on who the officiating crew is and how the game starts, how the game is going to be called. True? I mean,
I'm not going to formulate an opinion until Damian Cox tweets about it.
Oh, God.
Okay, so here we go. So now, well, I don't even remember what he tweeted about this week that you got upset
He wants us to ignore Marchand.
Yeah.
We should go in the room and turn our back on him.
Okay, now you're taking us on a tangent. The Marchand segment is later with Tuukka Rask. Right. Just save that.
No.
Then there's Steve Dangle, who thinks that the Bruins are ruining hockey.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, well, I hope we have time
Toronto's
for that.
Full poopy pants.
Here's Brind'Amour, who talked about, he held his tongue as best he could after the game, talking about the Dougie Hamilton penalty.
Do you have any thoughts on Dougie Hamilton's interference penalty?
Which one?
The first one.
There's no point commenting on that. I mean, they were penalties both ways, I thought, were called and not called. So, I mean, there's no point in getting into the officiating.
Chris, front left. Did you think Dougie was playing on the line tonight to get those penalties? Or?
Well, he's playing on the edge. We all were. I mean, not me. But, I mean, the guys were, he was trying to be engaged and maybe he took it too far. And so I haven't really even looked at him. I was frustrated as everybody on some of the calls. But, again, I think we got to kill him. We take a penalty, we got to kill him. We didn't do that.
Up front in the middle.
So, by the way, who was that asking the question first? You had a visceral reaction to the female voice in there.
I did not have a female. Oh. It had nothing to do with it being a female voice, Ken.
Who was
Where are you trying to go with this?
I don't know. I thought I saw a reaction. Okay, never mind. So Brind'Amour there, he's upset about it, but he's holding his tongue. He's not going Tortorella.
And you know what, too, with the roughing penalty? I always say you don't know what led up to it. He might have been warned to keep his arms down, to not do what he did, and he didn't listen because he's Dougie, so...
The roughing penalty. Now he got caught with interference and also with the elbow to the head.
Well, the roughing was the first one.
It's the second one. Okay. The second one was away from the play and that one. The more I looked at it, it wasn't an elbow, but it was one of those reverse hits that was completely unnecessary. There's something about Dougie Hamilton that he just refuses to play the puck when he goes into along the boards.
Right. You can't stop short and elbow a guy.
But people have been getting away with that in these playoffs, and they haven't been calling them those reverse hits, which, in my opinion, you shouldn't be able to throw those.
Right. Do you want that in the game? I mean,
no.
There's a whole phrase of playing the puck, taking a hit and playing the puck in the NHL.
And there's no way that the trailing player can defend themselves on those hits.
Correct. And you don't want headshots in the game, whether that actually hit him in the jaw or wherever. Here's Hamilton after the game. He was in denial mode.
I didn't agree with either, so not much else to say. It's the game's over now, and nothing you can do about it now.
How much did that just kill your momentum for you guys?
Yeah, for sure. I think we're playing a, I guess, not bad game, but had the lead in the third and took some penalties and gave them the lead, so tough to come back from that.
Do you feel like this was called tighter than your normal playoff game, the way they say, refs let thing go? Do you think it was tighter than that?
Not going to comment on the refs.
Well, that's the signature sequence of game.
Was it that much tighter, though? Called? I mean, there was, four power plays one way, two? It's not that much tighter.
The Bruins were 2-for-5. The Canes were 1-for-3. There were a lot of penalties.
Maybe from Raleigh, if you haven't watched a game, starting April 1st, you started watching the games, maybe then you think it was tighter, but I didn't think it was tighter.
I don't really want to see a bunch of power plays in a playoff game, just as a general rule. I don't think that makes it more exciting. I'd rather see the free flow and like Don Cherry said, it's supposed to be war. I generally agree with that, but the other end of it is, before the lockout, there's a reason they had a lockout. They changed rules. It was so tough for Stars to get any time and space. If you start letting this stuff go, you're just going to have guys getting mauled. And even the one call in the game was when Marchand got slashed on the hands and they called it. Do you want those kind of plays in the game?
No, you don't want guys. I mean, as much as I love to see the swallow the whistles and things like that and not see penalty after penalty after penalty, you don't want to see your own Stars getting slashed in the hands all game.
Right. So, and you have to set a tone.
It's a balance there.
In general, even though the officials change, I'm assuming they change for today's game.
Right.
You set a tone early in a series as to how you're going to have the series go.
All I'm asking for is a little consistency.
Consistency.
Call it the same way throughout.
Right. But that, there's no doubt that it turned the whole sequence of the game. Maybe the Bruins would have taken over anyway in the third period.
They were getting dominated in the second.
They were getting dominated midway through the second. I would say late second, they started to come alive a little bit, and they carried it over. But, yeah, I mean, you can't just assume without those penalties the Bruins are going to come back and win the game. So to start us off here on Sunday, Skate, what do you think about the officiating, in particular in Game 1 and through the playoffs? 617-779-7937.
Did you even say Happy Mother's Day yet, Ken?
I didn't, but I'm waiting because Maria in Watertown is early today, and I'm assuming she's got stuff to do. So we say Happy Mother's Day to Maria, and we just let her give her the floor, right? That's
absolutely.
That's the best way to do it.
That's her present.
Good morning, Maria.
Thank you, thank you. I do have stuff to do. I'm getting ready for my traditional Mother's Day round of golf with my kids.
All right.
And yeah. And then a beautiful afternoon of watching Bruins hockey and hopefully topping it off with a win. With regard to the officiating, my assessment, my professional assessment is that it's been one big bucket of poop throughout the playoffs. And for those people who are labeling Boston fans as whiners, I do take exception to that, because this fan just is asking, as Pete said, for consistency. Just if a penalty is a penalty in one game, then call the penalty in the next game. You know, slew footing someone is a penalty as far as I can see in the rule book, you know, and that's all we want. I think savvy fans are just reaching a boiling point with the lack of consistency with the officiating. And if this is the best of the best, then, you know, I'm saying bring back the two officials who were suspended, sit them all down in a room, and have them take a look at Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals between the Bruins and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, can the refs put their whistles away all the time? No. But I think that's a good starting point for watching how officials get out of the way and allow the players on the ice to dictate the outcome of the game. That's number one. Number two, Dougie Hamilton, if this kid is at some point going to fulfill his potential, which was really high when he first came into the league, I wanted him to be a Bruins franchise defenseman. He's got the tools. He's got the skills. He's got the size. But this kid doesn't want to get hit. And I think that's what happens when he goes in the corners. He turns around to see what's coming at him because he doesn't want to get hit. And that's when he gets frustrated, is when you take a shot at him. And I think if the Bruins can, you know, target him and keep pounding him, he's going to melt as he did the other night. Connor Clifton, I'd like to see a little bit more of this kid. I think he's played very, very well, better than I expected him to play. And then a question for you guys. What happens to the Bruins in the second period? I don't understand why they consistently are struggling in the second period, trying to get out of their own end. I get the long change, but at this point, haven't we been able to figure this out yet? Just your thoughts on that, and I hope everyone has a happy Mother's Day who's out there listening. Thanks for the time, guys.
Thanks, Maria. Happy Mother's Day. Excellent points, as always. Do you want to shelve the second period discussion for later, or we can get to that now? I saw the Globe wrote about it. It is interesting. I guess let's get to it. They are -1 in goal differential in the second period through the playoffs, despite being +15. And Pete was spitting out goal differential stats before we even came on the air today. That the Bruins are actually lead the NHL in the playoffs in goal differential?
By far.
Of the remaining teams?
The second highest team is the Hurricanes, and they're +6. The Bruins are +15.
So Cassidy was asked about this, right? And he talked about the three forwards changing together as one issue.
I fell asleep. I mean, if it was in the Globe, good for the Globe. But I have no interest in the who cares the second period. Well, I mean, you look at what's a -1 you said. I mean, they haven't really been burned by this.
And a -30 shot differential.
Well, that's the thing. You said they haven't been burned by this. They've been playing terribly in the second period, and they're still staying in games.
That's where Tuukka Rask has done largely his best work.
Right.
I mean, that's the reason.
It's the ebb and flow of the game, and you know that you're going to get the teams.
The one thing Cassidy said is
that they get off to good starts,
yes,
and then clearly the other team has to respond, and that's the second period. I mean, this isn't a major storyline of the it's called 2 days off between games, and let's really dig deep into this.
But if
this
your goalie's
nonsense.
Not playing like an elite goaltender, that's when you can lose games.
Yeah,
right. Lose control of those games. And that's why Tuukka's been so valuable in these playoffs.
Right. After the Greg McKegg goal made it 2-1, that whole 2 to 3 minute sequence afterwards, I mean, Carolina just owned the Bruins. They were working them really good, which is why Pete threw out the tweet last night, kind of, I'm sure, sort of tongue-in-cheek. Is it too early to declare the series over and the Bruins sweep? And that's kind of what I was thinking after the first game, too, just based on, you know, man, you're Carolina. You have a 2-1 lead. You blow it. Hamilton has a meltdown.
McAvoy's not in the lineup.
Right, right. That's the biggest point. And McAvoy's not even in there. And you had to have that game with that lead in the third. They didn't. So, but if you dial it back, this is not a 5-2 game. It's a 2-1 game where the Bruins were outplayed through two periods. Right, so it's
well,
you can't say
in the first period. It's a pretty good period for them.
Yeah, Kampfer scored early, but it was a 1-1 period, right? 1-1 after one.
It was tight.
It was close.
There were concerns after two periods. I wouldn't say that the Bruins were necessarily overly outplayed, but there were definitely concerns where you're like, okay, this Carolina team is legit. They were giving the Bruins problems.
I would agree with that, and mostly Aho, Teravainen, Niederreiter, those guys were getting some good chances. It's not like Clifton even looked terrible. He had like one giveaway early. So, you know, you could blame it on just McAvoy being out, and you're going to expect some frustration. But anyway, Matt, can you sit here today and say the Bruins are clearly the better team based on that one game?
Based on the one game, no. Based on everything else you've seen, yes.
To the point of this series is over? This series is going to be four or five
Absolutely.
Games?
Absolutely. Four or done. Five games, done. There's no doubt about it.
Well, there you go. Matt Stradamus
says it's
done.
They're just that much good. They're just that was a good sentence. Huh?
That much gooder.
We call that a mutt.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at Carolina, Peter Mrazek seems to be an issue if we're looking at that one game.
Yes, yes.
And you know, I think that there are positives for them. Their power play getting back on track and their first opportunity was a big sign for them. And I think their speed can give the Bruins problems, but you said it. I mean, you have to have that game with Charlie McAvoy out of the lineup, coming into Boston and taking that first road game would have been huge for them.
Yeah.
Now it's lost opportunity.
This is what it comes down to.
I'm afraid to. You know, I'm afraid to declare that because the Celtics won game one against the Bucks, and then everybody looks stupid.
This is not
and
the Bucks.
I agree. And this team was down 2-0 to the defending cup champions and 3-2 and came back in both instances in round one.
I thought you were concerned because Ken Jeong wished the Hurricanes good luck.
Well, I am concerned about that, as our producer John Anderson told us.
Dr. Ken Jeong.
Viral social media.
Hi, this is Ken Jeong, a.k.a. Mr. Chow from The Hangover. I just want to wish my home state team, the Carolina Hurricanes, good luck in the playoffs. Toodaloo!
Wait, he has to identify like what his character was in a movie from 10 years ago?
We haven't even seen
Toodaloo.
the rabid Raleigh home crowd at, what is it, PNC. PNC Arena?
Yeah.
With a hurricane siren, they still crank that up before the game?
They
have celebrities
sure.
come in?
Did Vegas steal that from them? Because Vegas has the siren now.
Oh, they do?
No, I think Carolina still has it.
Okay.
Because I was down there for the last time they were in the conference finals, and they had Bill Cowher down there for one of the
games. I was down there once. They had Ric Flair, you know. Yeah,
right. So they bring out all the celebrities.
It's been loud. I can't wait to see.
It is very loud. I'm not going to take that away from them.
I wonder
it's
which
loud.
Hurricanes player is but, going to, you know, to prop up how loud the building is. And
front-running fans, as Don Cherry
said. You see Brandon Dubinsky?
Brandon Dubinsky right.
Still talking about how loud Columbus was.
That's true. Columbus had a lot of good phrases, quotes, that were like amounted to nothing, but they were entertaining.
a series of quotes.
I mean, Tortorella dent the goalie and declaring a Game 7 win, and Dubinsky.
I love how he has to identify himself as the character from The Hangover from 10 years ago. Like, he haven't done anything since then.
He was in Avengers Endgame, Matt.
Who wasn't?
That's true.
We can't have Maria and Fred in the same segment, can we? Unless Fred's got stuff to do. I'm teasing Fred ahead of the next segment. This is Sunday Skate. We're on 7 to 9 today, an hour shorter than last week, but
and then you got
complain.
A four-hour palate cleanser before the Red Sox game.
Right. And we're going to warm you up for Bruins and Canes game two today, 3 p.m. start on this Mother's Day. You can join us at 617-779-7937. We're presented by Wise Snacks and Star Market. We'll get to Fred and all of your calls, talking officiating, and we'll get more into Dougie Hamilton. What went wrong in Boston? What went wrong for him in game one? Is he just a whiny SOB or is he misunderstood? But first, a trending update. Done.
They're just that much good. That was a good sentence.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The chant of Dougie in the background there, Doc. The chant is Dougie.
Doc Emrick, not the best in business for nothing. They came. I didn't think they would take that long to come, but the Dougie chants did arrive midway through the third period. More reactionary than I thought first period it was going to be merciless, but it really wasn't that way, was it?
It's not, and it's just the way the nature of the fan these days. They're too busy getting in their seats, eating, drinking their $15 beer. They have to be prompted on the board to say stuff, and then it finally came around when he got involved a little bit. They should have been booing him. They should have been all over him from the start.
But this is a problem for Dougie Hamilton because he almost escaped. Then he had to make himself the story of game one with two bad penalties, although Pete defends him on the boarding penalty.
And then can't own up to it.
The interference. Back has touched the puck.
The interference penalty, yes.
Back has touched the puck like a second before he got hit.
Right. It should have been interference, but it should have been a penalty, right?
I didn't think so. I didn't think it was that
bad.
Popped
him in the face.
I thought it was clear interference. Maybe this is part of the problem. Three of us have varied opinions on every play.
200 games a year, and I have no idea what the rules are. Officiating changes every game.
And you got two refs out there who the game's obviously moving fast. It's maybe just impossible to officiate cleanly this sport. But anyway, that's the way it went. Hamilton's a story. Is he going to be rattled going forward?
Oh, he's absolutely rattled.
Did you talk to him?
I did not talk to him. I don't have to talk to him to know he's rattled.
I don't think anybody needs to talk to him.
I can take his temperature from here.
But the Bruins would be wise to exploit that in game two today, right?
Absolutely. Go right in his face. Right off the first time he catches the puck. Can you imagine that this is the guy? Think how much he saved the Bruins from themselves. They were going to give him, what, the 5 or 6 year, $6 million treatment, and he wouldn't take it from them.
What did they offer him? Is that what the.
Yeah, it was one of those kind of not a bridge, but not a commitment for life type deals. It was up there, and could you imagine this is the guy you were going to see as your heir apparent to Chara as opposed to McAvoy? I mean, think how much he saved them from themselves. You got him out of town, and the next year you drafted Charlie McAvoy to redo this. I mean, holy cow, this guy cannot be a defenseman you're going to build around at this point. And it's not just the Bruins. We know Calgary gave up on him quick too.
I don't want to mercilessly dump on Doug.
No, I do.
Because he's...
What did I get up this morning for?
He's a good player.
He's good.
I don't know if I would trust him in these moments.
He's good. He's good. He thinks he's better than he is in his own mind. And some teams get tricked into thinking that. Obviously, the Hurricanes not so much because they have kind of cast him maybe in a secondary role here.
He's the hockey version of Kyrie Irving, you're saying? Just thinks he's better than he is.
If I knew what that meant, I would answer that.
I'm not even sure I know what it meant. I just thought it was slick to say.
His resistance to taking the body in the corners and by the boards, and just his mental state in game one.
The crazy
was not
thing
ideal.
Is that this guy used to take the body in junior. Maybe when he was bigger than everybody, he liked to pick on people because he got suspended for that
still
terrible
still bigger
hit.
Than most people. He's 6'6".
Well, yeah, but he's a toothpick. I mean, he's got a little bit of muscle on him, but he's not really that. He's not David Backes.
He's, like
he's not.
He's still he's bigger
not,
than all the guys.
Patrick Hornqvist or something like that. I mean, you get a man. I mean, he still doesn't shave, I don't think, Dougie. So he's out there. He's, doesn't have much weight on him, and he's going against power forwards in the NHL, he gets scared. So, you know, he still gets his money. And
he does, and when he does go to throw a hit, it seems like he's, a lot of the times, it's a bad hit.
And you just got to hope that Gerard Brindamore doesn't really believe this nonsense. You got to hope behind the scenes he's saying, Dougie, what the hell are you doing screwing up our game?
Now, the Bruins traded him for a first and 2 seconds, which turned into Zach Sinishin, Jacob Forsback Carlson, and Jeremy Lauzon. None of them are, I mean, JFK has been up and down. But
yeah, I mean, Lauzon's going to be a top four, top five D next year. Sinishin is a waste. JFK, another waste. The point I'm making here is they didn't win the trade in that they didn't get what they should have gotten for him. I'm saying is that, okay, we changed paths. We need another foundational defenseman the next year. It kind of falls in your lap again with no one picking McAvoy, obviously. But you got to him. You made the right choice because you had the choice between him and the kid from BU, or
Hanifin?
In the next year in the draft they had a choice of someone else, another defenseman, and the kid that just came out of school, that went to Nashville, and they went with Charlie McAvoy. Right, exactly. They went to McAvoy and they made the right choice, and it kind of put you on the right path.
Well, and you're right about if they had spent $5.75 million annual on Dougie Hamilton, you're locked into that, and that costs you signing other guys down the road. Now, Fluto, I thought, had a really good piece in The Athletic. We've ripped Fluto a couple times throughout the playoffs. I know you're not always the biggest fan, but I thought this was pretty good. He talked about just defensemen in general and a lot of different capacities, but he mentioned that Hamilton this year was the second among defensemen in shots with 422, trailing only Brent Burns. So that tells you where Dougie Hamilton thinks his game is. And I guess Rod Brindamore supports it, right? They want to play low to high, and they want Dougie Hamilton to take his shots. I think he had 4 shots in game one.
Okay.
So he fires it. The difference between the way Carolina plays and the way the Bruins play, stay with me here now, 28 shots in game one from Bruins defensemen, only one. 28 shots from the Bruins, only one came from a defenseman, Steve Kampfer, his goal.
His goal, yeah.
During the season, the Bruins had 1,294 shots 5-on-5 by defensemen, which was only 19th in the league. Carolina was second most in the league. Basically, the Bruins don't ask their defensemen to shoot much.
Yes.
Okay,
this is true.
So there's stats to support this. But there is a quote from Cassidy in here when he talks about this, and he mentions in passing that his defensemen, quote, "I think they're all on their long-term contracts," end quote. Basically saying, I don't have to worry about this. I think it's a joke, tongue-in-cheek. But he's saying, I might not get away with this if I had guys coming up with big contracts in the future because they want to have personal stats rise to the forefront.
It's just a joke.
Then again, McAvoy's up and needs an extension.
That's the way Carolina plays, though. It's like they're a volume shooting team. They just get pucks on net. They're a big analytics-based built team. So they're all about shot attempts.
If Charlie McAvoy would shoot more, no one's complaining about it. No one's going to complain to him. They need to get more shots in the D, actually.
Yeah, seriously. They need to get more shots, period.
I mean, yeah, it's not their primary option, but they're clearly going to have to do that to win the cup. They're going to have to do it to get out of this series. And you need Torrey Krug to be more assertive and get more shots, and Charlie McAvoy, too.
But is this what Dougie Hamilton didn't want when Dougie Hamilton was Claude Julien. I know it was Claude.
Yeah. Nah.
Were they totally different under Claude in terms of this stuff?
Absolutely.
But there was something about Claude's style.
The game was different.
Why didn't he?
Oh, he didn't like that Claude would yell at him. You know, he didn't want Claude to get under his skin. Of course.
You also have to consider the fact that Dougie Hamilton was also traded after the trade.
Yes.
From Calgary.
And what's the reason for that? Did Calgary?
I don't think
say
Calgary liked him.
They just didn't like him.
Yeah.
Well, remember, he would go to museums instead of hanging out.
Exactly.
With the team.
He's going to museums. What kind of hockey player goes to the museum?
The best thing you can say about him, I think Brindamore said this, is that he's misunderstood. Like, that's the defense of him.
Unless it's like a museum of the female anatomy, I don't think hockey players should be going there.
I don't think guys should be traded for enjoying the finer things in life, but I also think that at a certain point in time, if you're not a guy who's well-liked in the locker room, a team puts a lot of emphasis on that, and they'll get rid of you.
Conversely,
if you're a better player, they don't care.
And I think Dougie Hamilton's a really, really good player.
And he just hasn't lived up to what he's supposed to be.
But overpaid at $5.75 million per? No?
No.
That's the going rate for a defenseman like him. You just got to know what you're getting.
Underpaid for as good as he is.
I mean, he had 18 goals this year, so that's pretty good.
You wouldn't want him at 5.75 on the Bruins because you're trying to Now you have McAvoy and Carlo, and you have real defensemen that you can build a championship team around. But on any other team, you know,
fine. But he's paid like a number one, and he plays
number
three.
That's not really number one money. That's
on this team it is. He makes more than Slavin, and Slavin's a better player.
Well, Slavin, and when's Slavin up? Is he on his first deal still?
No, he's signed for like a million years.
Well, he's a sucker.
I think it's a bad contract for him.
Right,
yeah.
It's a bad contract for him, so, you know.
And even Falk gets paid less and plays more. So, I don't know. Maybe Hamilton will come back in the series and have a positive impact, but based on game one, I think he's a mess. And the Bruins are going to exploit that.
The Bruins are going to go after him, for sure, and they should.
Let's go after Fred in New Hampshire, or vice versa. Fred is on early on Sunday Skate on this Mother's Day, following Maria. What's up, Freddie?
Ken, Pete, Matt, morning.
Morning.
Hey, Dougie's soft. That's all it is about Dougie. He's soft as a marshmallow. Hey, two hours, that's all you get. We're at the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
Get 2 hours? What the heck?
They have to cleanse their palate.
Does any people realize the station down the dial there made their reputation on talking hockey in 2011, and that's how they became what they became. Anyways, the past two series, you know, they lost the home ice advantage. Don't take the depression lightly. Put them away today. Take care of business at home, and you know. You didn't play 82 games to get in this position where you have home ice advantage. You take care of it, please. Okay. Marcus and Charlie, I told you, they'll be naming all kinds of babies. Marcus and Charlie.
JoJo?
The first game the other night, Marcus's backhand for that goal.
All right.
I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. That was pretty.
That wasn't even his best one of the playoffs, though.
No, it wasn't. Wasn't one of his best. Now, yesterday, I'm having my Wheaties and beer, right? And I'm reading this guest writer named Luke DeCock. And I'm thinking, the grammar school recess must have had had fun with this kid.
I bet.
But, so I'm reading the article, and there's words in it like immutable, surreptitious, vagarious.
Oh, it is the Globe.
And local gentry. I'm thinking, what are all the Raleigh fans? They all graduate Duke or something. I can't. I don't want to have my funk and waggle next to me while I'm reading a hockey article.
That's why you read Matt Kalman at EI.com, Fred. He compares Cassidy to Fonzie. He goes, he hits you right where the pop culture most warrants.
Isn't
it.
That a great pop culture reference for 2019?
It is.
I think Pete doesn't even know what the hell Fonzie is.
Oh, I sure do. Henry Winkler is he's my guy. Barry, one of the best shows on TV.
So, Freddie, you think they're in danger of lapsing in Game 2 as they've done in previous series?
They have it in two previous series, and, there's no need to do it. Take the bull by the horn and take care of it tonight.
They're going to.
This is, you know, and then they can kiss all their mothers goodnight after this. So
all right.
We got to take care of it. Not we, but the Bruins. take care, guys.
All right,
thank
Freddie,
you.
Be good. Actually, they lost game one at Toronto and won game two. But
game one was an absolute disaster for Toronto. They couldn't hold on to the puck.
Right.
They're going to take it, and this is what I was trying to say before my grammar was hijacked by Mutt, mm-hmm. is this team is just that good. If you look at the standings and you think, well, the Lightning had this historic season, if you take out the fact that the Lightning had this historic season and overshadowed everyone in this league, you'd be talking about this team as the elite team that it's been in the playoffs. They're just deep in every position.
But they win seven games with Toronto, who you thought stunk.
Toronto
and were down 3-2.
It's still it's the playoffs and things happen. But
we were crushing them when they were down 3-2.
Every little
Deadwood
thing.
Johansson, Cassidy's blowing it. I mean, you go through the litany.
He was Deadwood. He was. But luckily, the playoffs went long enough for him to come to life. I mean,
he called Dougie Hamilton marshmallow Marshmallow soft. That was the phrase that Milbury used in game six.
Right. Marshmallow soft.
For Johansson in front of the net.
Right.
And now he's become the story of,
Oh, he is one of the stories for sure. I mean, he's saving him and Coyle have been, they've kind of been the only consistent thing this whole playoffs. It's been
also
up and down.
Won a battle in the third period in front of the net, scored his goal.
Yeah.
He did. Probably, so. Let's talk more about Johansson and the trade deadline guys coming up. It is Sunday Skate presented by Wise Snacks and Star Market with us and with you until 9. Hope you can join us. 617-779-7937 or presented by Wise Snacks and Star Market.
Yesterday, I'm having my Wheaties and beer, right?
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People.
I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Johansson in front. He's got to be able to, after the give and go here, he's got to get in front of the goaltender. He can't be off to the side. He has to know what the angles are and plant himself there. Johansson does a flyby. Got to have a bigger presence in front of Anderson there.
Freddie Anderson has found a way to catch both of those point shots.
And I don't think Marcus Johansson is going to be the guy to be the net front's presence. I mean, he's marshmallow soft, actually.
Score! It is Marchand, and that one trickled over the goal.
Well, that's back from Game 6 against the Leafs. Bruins were down 1-0 in the game, 3-2 in the series, and Mike Milbury was just eviscerating Marcus Johansson, as I was at home watching, and we called him Deadwood Johansson, I think, shortly after that game, or before, I can't remember. But things have turned. Boy, have they turned. Marcus Johansson not only scored in Game 7, which was kind of a fluky goal, a bit of a lucky goal. Gardner gave it to him. He had a tremendous Game 1 finish with Coyle in the Columbus series. The tying goal, the backhand assist on the game tying goal, which I think is what you were referencing
absolutely.
Last segment, Matt, is unbelievable pass. One of the best
in the
playoffs.
That's when I called him Magic Johansson.
Yes, that stuck.
Did not stick.
Nowhere, but it's
fine. I can't convince the CBC just to repeat my nonsense like some people.
And he went from Mojo to JoJo somehow in this whole sequence.
He never was Mojo. That's the point. He's JoJo. It's on his sticks. He's JoJo.
Sorry,
it doesn't
geez.
Make sense to be Mojo. His name is Marcus. If his name was Morris, then Mojo, but not Mojo. It's JoJo. Johansson's JoJo.
And then he assisted on Coyle in the overtime winner.
In the overtime winner, yeah.
On Game 1 against Columbus, and the not only the goal, but also another assist in the first period of this Game 1 win over the Canes on Thursday night. So, were we totally wrong on Marcus? We obviously were totally wrong on Marcus Johansson. Why were we wrong? Was it just a matter of circumstance, getting comfortable, the injury?
I think, first of all, we've been trained to learn that most of Don Sweeney's deadline deals don't work out.
Correct.
So, we were just putting him in that basket right off
the
bat.
He was in the Rick Nash basket.
Then he gets blown up, and you just don't know if you're going to come back from a lung injury like that, and obviously then he got sick. We don't know if that was related to the injury or he really got sick. He wouldn't kind of divulge how bad it was when I talked to him about that, and then he just didn't look good. He looked lost out there.
I also think that he didn't have a solidified spot in the lineup, so you're trying to figure out who he is, where he's going to slot in, and what his role is going
to
be.
I mean, obviously, I guess he came here and deferred to them when they asked if he wanted to play right side, but clearly not comfortable on the right side, didn't want to do it, maybe should have stood up for himself, maybe would have gotten a better groove playing the left side on another line without even trying that out. But, you know, clearly, too, the Bruins had to try everything they could in that right side because they hadn't solidified, and they still haven't. I mean, David Backes has been great, you know, in his little bit of time. Coleman had his moments. They're just rotating whatever they have in that spot. They still have not filled that role, and it's just amazing that you still have David Krejci producing the way he is, and I hope everybody who over the last couple of years told me David Krejci has to raise players, you know, production like Sidney Crosby does, I think he's done that.
Yeah, I think
playoffs.
Anybody's criticizing David Krejci at this point in time has not watched the Bruins this year.
No.
He's one of their most important players.
I mean,
no, but you got to trade him, Pete. It's the only way out from under it. You got to trade him.
You know, I'm huge on Krejci. I thought he should have been their sixth man award winner, even though that was, you know, I was laughed at because you shouldn't give players like that kind of an award, I guess.
Right.
Which is technically true, but just in terms of the Tavares
and you look at the production, not just this year, you look at the production these past couple of years with the rotation he's had on the right side.
Yeah,
it's pretty impressive.
But Johansson, his best skill, I think, is his vision and his passing.
Absolutely.
The goal that he scored was good net front work.
Yeah,
but it wasn't like he was like in a fierce battle with DeHaan.
He took some hits over the course of that game. I mean, it was a physical game, and he took some hits in front. He's not soft, and we've discussed this a million times.
He's not going to dominate you in front of the net. He's not going to overpower anybody, but he's capable of staying in there, winning some battles, and he's not marshmallow soft. He's not getting bullied in front of the net.
And what is it? There's three prominent Swedes in this series. Not one of them is soft, so let's stop just...
No, they're Finns. Well, what are the other Swedes?
Well, Aho is Swedish, right?
Or Walmart's Swedish.
Or is he Finnish? I don't know.
No,
whichever.
Finnish. Aho's a Finn.
The point is, none of the Scandinavian guys are soft in this series. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, Teravainen and Aho are going to decide this series for the Canes. They're
right.
Their two best players, arguably. Now, they gave a second and a fourth for Johansson, right? One of the guys that's still alive in the series in the postseason is Gustav Nyquist, who they were reportedly close to, and they may face him in the finals here the way San Jose is going. I know, Pete, you watch a ton of the Sharks. He's on their top line, right, for the most part. He's been playing pretty well?
He's fit in well with Couture and Meyer. That line has been one of the best of the past couple of rounds. The work that they did against Colorado's top line, which I think is the best in the league, and they held him. I think that they owned like 70% of the goals in that matchup. So that they've done really great work. There's
so
no doubt about that.
Would you rather have Nyquist or Johansson?
No.
Which Nyquist, if they make the cup finals, that's going to be 2 seconds.
I said all along that I wasn't going to really criticize them too much for not getting somebody from that basket of spare second and third line forwards. But they were obviously, this has been my theory, and no one's shot it down that I've talked to about it. They were just looking for someone with a little more size because they thought maybe he'd plug next to Krejci. They wanted some size there. So Johansson, a little bit of a bigger player than Nyquist, obviously bigger than Zuccarello. All these guys, that's why he was maybe more of the target.
I think the price for Nyquist was a little less. I think they just traded a second?
No, it was a second and a conditional third, actually becomes another second if they go to the cup finals. Yeah, so it might be 2 seconds.
It's a little more expensive.
More expensive for Nyquist. But I don't know if that's what...
Because they won Game 7 against Toronto, we could say that Don Sweeney's a genius. If they lose that game, we're throwing him under the bus. But clearly, again, this was a piece. It wasn't a steep price. They needed a forward with experience. We know, obviously, the postseason track record probably played in here too. He was pretty good for Washington over those years.
But I think you do have to recognize that he isn't the guy that I think that they wanted when they traded for him. They wanted that second line right wing.
Correct. Yeah, they almost lucked into Johansson fitting perfectly for what they want him for now.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly what comes out. And it's because A, he got healthy. And B, because they did win. Like I said, if they go out in seven, we're saying how come they didn't get somebody to play with Krejci.
But I think that saying that they lucked into it might be a little iffy, because I think that Don Sweeney wanted guys with versatility.
That's
because
true.
Both Coyle and Johansson had that versatility.
Right. Yeah. He didn't want to have playoff games with Carson Coleman as a second line right wing. That's all you have to know. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
And Carolina, we mentioned this on one of the shows. Their trade for Nino Niederreiter is huge. That was done early. That was back in mid-January, but they traded Victor Rask, a young center, but a guy who's got promise. He was a second-round pick. He was signed for long-term.
Yeah, people were stripping the Wild for parts, and it worked out for the Bruins and for the Hurricanes.
Yeah, so, I mean, if there's anything you fear from Carolina the rest of the series, Niederreiter, Teravainen, that line is good. Aho is obviously good. I don't know if they're good enough to beat the Bruins. I would say no. But they're not embarrassing.
They've been great. They've been great this postseason. But you also look at what the Bruins have done against top talent, and there's reason to believe that that line will not kill you.
And that goes back to this whole, Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak, why aren't they going to play right? For all the struggles offensively in sporadic games, by the way, because now Marchand leads all scorers in points, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy who we're throwing under the bus, the Couture pass him in last night. So he's second in all scoring for all the pressure we're putting on him. How many even-strength goals has that line been on for against? I mean, these guys are shutting down some of the top lines on these other teams, and that's a major part of their job. And if you're getting the secondary scoring, that's really all you need. And that's why Sweeney has built this team the way it's built. It's not the top-heavy team that we saw last year get, knocked off by the Lightning.
Well, I'll talk more about the matchups in this series coming up in our second hour of Sunday Skate. And also, we have to get to DJ Bean, former host of this here program, sticking the knife in and twisting it after that Columbus series win.
Something about Billy Joel or something? What was it?
Not Billy Joel. It was close. Oh. Very close. And we'll talk about Kalman's electric Fonzie story at WEEI.com in relation to Bruce Cassidy. Matt Kalman is here from EEI.com. Pete Blackburn from CBS Sports.
At least you can understand all the words.
We understood all the words. Indeed, it's Sunday Skate on WEEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.